Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out. Say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything.
Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're going to talk about a movie that probably nobody else watched.
yeah, like it's been critically panned, but we'll get into it. We'll save it for later. I'm not going to say anything right now.
It's a big, bold, beautiful journey.
Yeah, definitely a big swing.
And we'll talk about our usual nerdy stuff. I mean, generally, we've been opening the pod with like shitting on Alien Earth and how much we're not enjoying the show, even though literally everyone else is, and it baffles me. But
yeah,
it is what it is. This episode was almost no exception. I think you texted me when you were watching it, like, Yeah, it's not getting any better. And I texted you when I finally got around to watching it. I was like, holy shit, there's a reason why we don't see the aliens in the daylight.
Yes.
They have to do so much cutting around that costume that
it looks so bad.
Yeah. And I mean, of course it does. It's a big rubber suit. I mean, you know, that's why you make those monster movies in the dark.
Yep.
And everything's always wet and slimy and shadowy, and like, because that's what makes it creepy. And
your imagination still fills the gaps.
Too. Yeah, it's still terrifying. Like, if that thing walked up to you in real life, it would be terrifying. But it does take a lot of the sting out of the fear out of it when you see it in broad daylight and you're just like, oh, I'm watching a TV show. It made it really hard to like just let it be what it is. And
yeah,
there's so many other things in the show that are already stupid, in my opinion. I mean, I think I don't remember if I texted you this or not, but when Steph and I were watching it, definitely the one thing I said was when they came up on the graves
of yes.
the children.
Yes.
Why you wouldn't bury their bodies? Like, scientifically, you wouldn't.
No.
And these people, I guess maybe the doctor and the psychiatrist, you know, the husband and wife, I guess maybe they might insist on it. I don't know, because of their, but it seems like their affection for the children come after the fact, not pre-body transfer, you
exactly.
know?
Exactly. So, well, it was implied that they really only knew Wendy. Like, they only knew of Wendy because of the fact that she was the first subject, and then they kind of used her as a reference point of, like, we're going to take sick kids, and the rest of them were just screened. Like, even she was just screened, but she had a little bit more detail in it. Like, there was no, like, I don't feel like there's any affection for, like, even afterwards, it was still kind of like they still treat them as, They're lab rats. It was like they had affections for lab rats. But anyways, like, it is weird that from a scientific point of view, yeah, you didn't just cremate their asses, because that's a health concern. For a scientist, it's like, if you're, like, unless you needed something from the body, which you would have already gotten, like, you would have already right. done all if, the if testing. If there were
organs or tissues or whatever, you would have already taken it would be preserved. And then you would cremate the body. And, like, it also flies in the face of, you know, the dipshit boy, genius, whatever the hell they want to call him.
Yeah.
Like, he's not sentimental at all. And
no.
He would have laughed at their sentimentality about all this and insisted, like almost cruelly insisted, that they burn the bodies. So it makes it even less unlikely that there would be graves. And I like, who are the graves for? Like, they're so hidden and nobody, the kids didn't know about them.
No.
The families don't know where those children are. Who were the graves for? Like, it makes no fucking sense at all
that it really those doesn't.
Graves are there. And it's stuff like that that it's like, I don't know, man. We're going to talk about something similar when we talk about A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey, I think. But it's, I don't know. It's just, it's baffling to me, you know.
Yeah. And, like, I don't want to be, like, always dour on this show. Like, the one thing I will say is, like, Timothy Oliphant really needed to be a replicant in Blade Runner.
Like, yeah.
Like, his whole, like, it finally connected with me. His whole, like, blonde hair and, like, him doing this whole reference to
Rutger
Hauer.
Yeah, Rutger Hauer. Yeah.
And so. I'm like, the Roy Batty of it all. I'm like, and if you give him a fucking speech while he's dying, I'm gonna throw punches. I keep on saying, like, I'm like the meme from, like, Cowboys fans as they continually lose, like, they're punching their fucking TVs. That's me. Like, I've never actively disliked a TV series, like, in a long time like this. Like, literally, I don't watch this with my wife because I don't want her seeing how upset I get over a TV show. But I literally sit there, Logan, and I literally scream at the screen. Like, I don't scream, but I yell at the screen because and it makes it worse. Like, I've lost so much respect for some of the reviewers that I'm reading that are like, right, like, man, I've stopped listening to Joanna and, cause I listen to them all the time. Joanna and, what's her name? Mallory. I skip over episodes now. Like, because I just don't want to hear the effusive love for this show that Noah Hawley is a fucking genius. And I'm just done with it. It's not. It's like, the only genius part of this show is Oliphant. Like, that's it. Like, the only praise I can give. Like, the ending really pissed me off. It's like, you spent all that goddamn time getting your sister away and saying that they're all going to go away, and you're a soldier. You know the consequence. You know that she's a weapon. Like, they've created a weapon. Like, that's all you know. And the two little girls that you have left, and they go fucking hard on those Marine, those private security people. You know what? I'm sorry, but that's the consequence. Because you know that, like, you already know that they would kill you as quickly as they were ordered to do. Why are you letting them sit there? And pissing off your sister. Your sister now looks at you and goes, like, she's done. She's such a binary person now. Like, she's, like, very much like Oliphant's character at that moment. I'm like, you are, like, either you were the stupidest fucking character, like, you were the stupidest human being that there is, and he's proven quite literally that he is, or you're very badly written. Or it's a combination of both, which I feel like that's more the point. It's like, you're extending out the drama, right? You want more of the drama. And to me, that's bad writing. You couldn't find a better way to do it other than put your guns down. I'm sorry, but if your sister meant that much to you and you know what these fucking people are capable of and she's doing what she's doing along with the other robot, I don't know. Like, I feel like this is a world that deals in absolutes. Like, it's a very much so a billionaire run. Like, it's a corporation run, like fascist meritocracy, right? Like, where they will not hesitate to end your life, and they will find, like, you, they will not find you again. Why are you doing this? You're a fucking moron. What? But then again, what do I expect from a fucking idiot that watches fucking the only movie he watches is Ice Age 2 on a fucking loop because of trauma with his kid. Like a 300-year-old movie he's watching on a trauma loop because of his fucking sister loved it. It's like he's a moron. I mean, he looks like a moron. He's a fucking there looks like there's some serious like issues with him anyway. So I guess, but that's the kind of like this is the kind of rage and anger that the show brings out in me. And just to see other people like, oh, it's genius, da 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 da.
It's because it could be genius. There's bones there that's like this could be so great, but then like you think about it, like. A guy like Vince Gilligan and structures stuff. And it's just like, it's not smart. It's not as smart as it thinks it is. And
no, not at all.
That's very, very frustrating.
Oh, it very much so is. Like, you bring up Gilligan, and, you know, he's got the sci-fi show on Apple TV that's coming out in a couple of months.
Yeah, I'm excited to check it out.
Yeah, like, I'm really, really excited about it. Like, I was like, Rhea Seehorn? And she's in something that we're going to talk about later on that, like, you know, we'll talk about it, but like, yeah, like I'm very, very excited for whatever this thing is that he's like, that sci-fi, like you mentioned Vince Gilligan, and I'm like, you know, I've always been shaky about like the praise that Holly gets because I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, I really don't know if it's like, you know what it is. I see him and he's literally the boy genius. That's literally how I feel that he's like that's him. Like, I think that I think unironically he wrote Boy Genius as a version of him, and I don't think he realizes it's either that or he sees himself as the Oliphant character. Either way, either one is so off, right? Like, it's so off. Like, you don't understand. Like, you missed the target by a country mile. But it's like somebody like Gilligan. I will give him the latitude, a country mile, to go wherever he wants to go because of how good of a writer he is, and that all goes back to like the stoner surfer that is Chris Carter, who taught everything, like that basically taught him and all of the writers that came out of the X-Files like what truly, like it always impresses me whenever I know that somebody that's an X-Files writer has finally, I mean, they're all in their 50s and 60s now, which makes sense that they would be all running shows, but it's always like one of those things where I stop and I go, yeah, it's because they worked at the X-Files, which was for eight seasons. I do not count season 9 moving forward, but those 8 seasons are like arguably some of the most brilliant TV of the 90s, and it formed everything that we know about mythologized TV. But
yeah,
I don't know, like Alien just continually just like it, like I said, it's like I now understand, like I, like it was like I had a crass notion of the reason why Noah Hawley got Alien Earth, and I think I kind of talked about it with you. Like, I was like, yeah, you know what? Like, he probably pitched something up with a bunch of androids, and fucking Ridley on his shit again just was like, Alien Earth, mate. It's actually about androids, mate. And literally fucking, like, he found, like, and it's, there's no lie in that. I was like, why did I have to be so right about that? Because he found somebody that just loved the same shit that he did, and it's like found what he found interesting. But then that doesn't make, that absolutely makes sense when you're in charge of this, right? Because, I mean, like, it's weird because, like, even if I go back to Feige's Alien movie, like, go back to Romulus, the alien, like, I think that what intrigued him was Feige was able to create an android character that he hasn't, which was one that was intelligently scary. Like, you spend too much time with these androids and they just don't work. They become computer programs. Or like, there's a character like, man, I laughed so hard at Only Murderers when Oliver kicked the robot, because it's the exact fucking way that I feel about the, like, that robot is the exact way I feel about the androids in Alien Earth. It just takes the, it takes any of the mystery out of it because you have them on screen for so long. They're just, they're vending machines.
Yeah.
That serve a story purpose. I don't know, man.
And it doesn't intrigue me at all. Like,
I
don't know what they find so fascinating about it. I mean, it's just like, okay.
Well, yeah, like, I don't, like, what is it? Like, honestly, like, what is it? Like, can you figure it out? Like, yeah. I know that Ridley has talked about how he's what he can, like, he's what they call, quote, he calls himself, quote unquote, a logician, right? Like, he's a very logical, like, he approaches things from a logic point of view when he's breaking down stories. And he's admitted to people that he could never create a story, and any story he's created has been not, like, has been very troubled. And I mean, he created the story for, like, it's funny that he talks about this, like, during the Gladiator era, but then he goes and he does it in Prometheus and Alien Covenant, where he creates these stories, at least that's what everything heard, and true to his word, they're terrible. They make no sense. And here's the weirder part, is, like, you're a logician, but you have your scientist running in a straight line as a vertically, a vertical spaceship, a long oblong spaceship is falling. Like, okay, that makes sense. Yeah, you're a logician. Fucking idiot. You can't see the forest from the trees. But, like, and I talk about this, like, because I care about this series. Like, it's made me realize how much I care about this series. It really has. Like, I think it's because we've had shit for so long, but also intrinsically, like, at the end of the day, like, the movies are only 2 hours long, and ultimately the beginning and the ends are always about the aliens, but the middle is about the Ridley shit. This is all the middle shit that Ridley's interested in, right?
Yeah.
Like, and then, like I said, like, going back to, like, Feige's Alien movie, it works because the middle portion is both Alien and the android working menacingly to stop the humans from trying to destroy the alien. And, like, that's when it works best, is when an android is almost like an operative. He's like a spy, like a James Bondian kind of spy.
Yeah. That's what, you know, what really, really gets me is that we're getting, like, the David Android thing. Like, everybody knows who and what he is. But, like, okay, that's fine, I guess. Because we haven't really had a lot of his character. Enough, in my opinion. I think he's doing an excellent job. Yeah. I loved his part of this episode.
Oh, yeah.
But the whole, like, it's also that, like, search for everlasting life, you know, that's part of Prometheus and now part of this show. But the first movie, like you said, the android is this agent of chaos, essentially. Mm-hmm. And it starts to feel, I don't know, just empty, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's very frustrating. I'm with you. Like, I care about the franchise. I care about the show. It's just not, it's not worthwhile for me. You know, I'm going to finish it out. We'll see, I guess, if there's a season two and if it can be better. But I don't know. I wish it was as smart as it thinks it is. And it weren't so navel-gazing, like, with the...
Yeah.
All the other dumb shit. So, So I did get to watch the 3-episode premiere of another show that I know we talked about, but I can't remember if you watched. Did you watch Gen V?
No, I did not. Because, okay, so you dissuaded me from that first premiere. You dissuaded me so good on it that I was like, nah, like, even if, because it's from the boys universe, I'm just not gonna do it. And I'll tell you, to be quite honest, this whole selling of Patrick Schwarzenegger's, fuck that. I'm fucking done with it. Like, I don't, like, between this and White Lotus, like, I'm like, no, I don't really need to be sold him. He's fucking whatever. He's
not a huge part. Like, season two is,
yeah,
feels like it's moved away from a lot of that. It's dealing with, like, stuff that happened in season one.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of needed a little refresher, because it, much like Peacemaker, and like all the other streaming shit we get, it's like,
yeah,
it's been a while.
Since, yeah, it's been almost officially 2 years, because the first, the first one was the end of September 2023. It was when it premiered the first season. So
it's back this week.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good.
Hmm.
I think it's a better start than season one. But unfortunately, I think you really need to watch season one to understand a lot of what's happening in this season.
Okay.
Because it's dealing with a lot of consequences. It's also kind of definitely dealing with the death of an actor from season one. I know we kind of sort of talked about that. One of the kids on the show died in a motorcycle accident, which is part of the reason season two was delayed for as long as it was.
I did not know that.
Yeah. They had to retool some things, and because my understanding is that he died, like, literally on his way to filming.
Oh, whoa. So, okay.
So, yeah, that kind of set things back. But it's a pretty good start.
Okay.
For a show that I did not like the first season.
Yeah.
I liked some things. I liked where a few characters went and a few characters that get introduced later. Like, there's, I'm pretty sure I talked about it, there's a character who basically just hallucinates everything, and his whole world, like, he can just drop into this puppet world, and everything is puppets, and it is really funny, really fascinating, and, like, his whole paranoid delusion thing, it's interesting. Here's the problem with this show, and also upcoming final season of The Boys, and another spinoff show that's supposedly coming, Vault Rising.
Yeah, I saw that. And, well, also, isn't it also, isn't there the other one about Soldier Boy? Or is Vault Rising?
I think that's Vault Rising.
Okay. Welcome. Then I'll continue on. I'm so sorry about that.
I don't know if I can handle watching this show and The Boys and maybe Vault Rising and the current climate of this country, because holy shit. These three episodes were filmed well before the previous election, and everything feels like exactly what is happening right now.
Oh, man. That's what my fear was for the whatchamacallit.
The Boys coming up.
The Boys, yeah. Like, I'm, like, really in fear of that, because, like, Kripke, like, another great writer, was very, like, he's been very much, like, he's been kind of a soothsayer because he just kind of he writes the worst version of the timeline, and like quite literally we're in the worst version of the timeline.
It feels like we just lean into that. let's do that.
let's be the worst pieces of shit in the world. Like, I'm sorry, like, you know, we're not going to get into it. Like, I refuse to get into it because this is a space where we don't try to bring into that. But man, these last couple of weeks have been really fucking hard. Really hard. Like if one thing were to happen, it would be one thing. But it's like all of the things are happening all at once.
It's not even once a day now. It feels like every 3 or 4 hours there is some new bullshit that we have to deal with.
Like so much so that now I don't open my social media. Like it's weird. I only open Letterboxd and I do things on Letterboxd if I need some kind of social media thing. Like the rest of the time, I don't open Instagram. I don't open Facebook because I'm so worried about what I'm going to see next. I'll open it once a day so that I can just take in all of the bullshit all at once. Because
Steph has gotten repeatedly like frustrated with me, and it's been like you've got to get off of.
Yeah,
like, you got to stop it because it's just
the doom scroll.
Yeah. And it just destroys my mood. And we had a conversation last week where basically it was like, what are you thinking about? And I'm like, this is what I just worry about this stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
This is all I do is worry about like what's going to happen. It makes it difficult for me to enjoy anything. But so back to Gen V though.
Yeah.
Two specific things in this season. Sean Patrick Thomas, I think that's his name. Yeah.
The dude from The Last Dance, African American actor. Yeah, okay.
Yes. So he was briefly in season one. He plays the father of a character.
Uh-huh.
And the young actor that died. So he is a major part of this season, kind of stepping into that place.
Okay.
He's really, really good. And it's exciting to see him doing something. I feel like it's been a really long time since we had him in a spotlight like this. And kind of just forgot that he's a damn good actor.
No, absolutely. Like, he's been, like, I think it's, to be quite honest, I think it's since the Barbershop trilogy. In the 90s, he was literally like one of those go-to guys, because I mean, he was in, like, he was always in, like, on the side periphery or supporting characters, but he was always really great. Like, he was in Can't Hardly Wait, Cruel Intentions, Dracula 2000, Save the Last Dance. I mean, he even, like, my favorite, like, I hate these guys that make these parody movies, but Not Another Teen Movie is the one where they got it all together. It is
brilliant. Not Another Teen Movie is, like, underrated in that genre.
And
it is Naked Gun level.
Yes. And I think it's also because, like, they're parodying something so vapid, the teen movie, and they're vapid filmmakers. So it's like it works perfectly. And he literally he has my favorite role because he literally plays a character called the token black guy. But he's like he was in like really like he was like he was always going on and he was doing things like I think the thing that I last saw him in that was kind of like, oh, okay, was there's a horror movie like it came out of like about I think it was in 2020 or so, like that's when I think I saw it, was The Curse of the La Llorona, and he plays one of the detectives. like one of the he plays one of these guys that like he's investigating, like he's a side character, but he actually had a bigger role in the movie than I'd seen him in a long time. You know, but it was good. But like it's kind of nice to hear, like you saying that, it's kind of nice to hear that he's back in the spotlight. Like he's actually got a bigger role than just like a reoccurring thing.
Yeah, I think he was in like maybe 3 or 4 episodes, which is about half of season one. But it was just because he's super powered, and there was this whole confrontation of like father and son, like because it's how did the kids get these superpowers, and they kind of mostly find that out in season one that they're kind of science experiments, some of them anyway. Yeah, he's fantastic. Okay. And he's got a really good like play with the other kid. I hate to call them kids, but young actors. Yeah, they're probably like
30 years old.
I think most of them are in their probably early 20s, but yeah, they're all playing, you know, 17, 18.
Yeah.
So the other big addition to this season, and this is the guy we're going to talk about twice in this episode, is Hamish Linklater.
Okay.
He is the new dean of the school. He is absolutely perfect. And it much like Steve Buscemi stepping into Wednesday season 2 and being the new dean, it's like that, only, you know, way worse, because this show pulls no punches. He is fucking evil. And also charismatic as hell. Like I really, really like this guy. And, you know, keep that in mind when I talk about him later.
Yeah.
But I do really like him as an actor, and he's really, really good in the 3 episodes so far this season. I can't tell you it's worth catching up on season 1 to get to season 2. Mm-hmm. I mean, but I'm really enjoying season 2 so far. So, you know, it may be worth it, you know.
Okay. I mean, I like, it doesn't sound like it's like something that I really want to, because I can already I can already feel like once you said it's like, you know, he's like, it's like he's a, like, you know, he's very zeitgeisty with this show. I can already tell what's probably happened on the show based off of current events, based on where this is set. And I don't want to go there. I literally don't want to go there. Fuck that. Kripke, you're a great guy. I've heard you on multiple podcasts. You're a geek. But also, you are very much like the George R. R. Martin of comic books, where, like, even though George R. R. Martin is the George R. R. Martin of comic books, but like comic book adaptations, where you take, like, it's like that's the thing, is that he does this whole thing of like, it started with Battlestar, right? Like, where it's 80% bad and 20% good, except for, like, Battlestar, there was the 20%. Now it's 95% bad, 5% good. So, yeah. like the balance is imbalanced. Like, before with Battlestar, I could take the 80-20, because that 20, because of the bad, it was like they understood, like, that made that 20% so much better, right? Like, it was kind of mirroring, like, back when, like, I don't think that really people have, like, people don't hold up Battlestar as much as they really should, because it is a very post 9/11 show. It very much so what we did as a, like, it's a very fascinating show, but also like it's hard. It is a hard show. Like it basically built what we are currently in our current era of like prestige TV, where it's like, let's just do 90% of shitty things, and then 5% is good. And yay, that'll be enough. And it's like, no, fuck you. Give me something a little bit better than that, you assholes. Anywho, yeah, like I will probably skip this one, and I will save my tolerance level for The Boys, because I mean we'll have to.
That's fair.
It's the final season, right? Yeah. You know,
we're the place we're at now is so fraught, like in the real world.
Yeah.
That I can't. What the fuck is Kripke gonna throw at us that's worse? You know what I mean? It's like how do you lampoon something that's like,
happening?
Yeah.
That's
we're lampooning ourselves on the daily. Like, how do you escalate that? What degree do you go to?
I don't know if you really want to put that in the air for Eric Kripke, because he can always do, like, he seems to have been the guy that's like, hold my beer. Like, he's literally the very definition of it. But at the same time, I know where you're coming from. Like, that makes complete sense, because it's like last year, or yeah, it was last year when The Boys came out. Like, we talked about it, and I was like, bro, I have to watch it in chunks where, like, I have to build them up and then watch a bunch of them all at once, because I cannot get through a weekly thing of dreading having to watch what happens next, where it's like, and the thing is that I think they realized it, and didn't they release them in chunks? They did 3-episode chunks.
It was like 3 and 2.
Like, you know, and
That might be how they do Gen V this year. So, because they put out 3 all at once. So,
And it's like,
it's going to be interesting to see.
I'm going to skip this one. I'm not even going to like try to like, cause like that means that I have to catch up on 11 episodes, and it's like, do I really want to go down that dour hole? No,
it is pretty depressing stuff. Like it's pretty rough. So, so I don't really blame you. That's why I said, I don't know if I can tell you it's worth, if you had seen all of season one, they're like, it's, you know, like catch up when you can, but to go through all that, it's so depressing that, it's probably not worth it. Less depressing. I did also watch the entire 10 episode Futurama drop.
So. Oh, okay. I'm a season behind. Everybody has said that this season, it's like this season is so much better than the last season.
The last season I started really, really positive on and kind of lost it towards the end. This one I do think is consistently better. The finale is a little strange, especially if it's the finale. Because I don't know if they have an order for another season past this.
This was like a 3-episode, like this was a 3-season order. Like, I know that much. Like, it was supposed to be like 8, 9, and 10. Like, that's
So spoilers for I say spoilers. I feel comfortable talking about the finale, because even when you get to it, by the time you get to it, we're going to be so far past talking about Alien Earth that you're going to be like, I guess it's kind of similar. That it does things that Alien Earth is trying to do so much fucking better. The finale all revolves around like this big light in the sky happens, and everybody like is, you know, what is it? What is it? What is it? And you find out it's a white hole, not a black hole. And that it's the beginning of a new universe. and they're part of a multiverse, which Futurama has explored before. Probably the best exploration is the box episode, where Farnsworth builds the box.
Yes.
You can go to different universes through the box, and we see all the different Fry and Leela's. That's a good episode.
Yeah,
good. So, yeah, there's a new universe being born, and the Farnsworth decides to, whatever happens, they're going to get in the ship. They're going to travel like however millions of years in stasis to see the birth of this new universe, and then come back and tell everybody how glorious it was. It's a very like okay premise. Like it doesn't really seem like something the Futurama crew would do. But what the episode does is, while the main characters are in stasis, the ship can create dummy versions of them that don't last very long to do tasks in the ship. So like, much like David in Prometheus, where he's just like doing the maintenance of the ship. So it becomes this whole thing of like just all of these versions of those characters being created. And how they interact and fight with each other. And like, it's really similar to the like android shit that Alien Earth is doing. And it's really fun. It's cute. Ultimately, it's not a satisfying conclusion. I won't get into what happens, but it is just like kind of funny that I know this specific batch of episodes were written well over a year ago. And I'm watching it going like, yeah, this is better than Alien Earth. Like, at discussing artificial intelligence and like, these are copies of the main characters. Like, so are they real? Do they have souls? Like, it's just all these questions that are played for jokes, but, yeah, it's pretty good. And it works as almost all the episodes in this batch work as standalone episodes.
Okay.
Like there's not a real through line, except for Amy and Kif. They're for the last two seasons, I think they're the only true through line. Like you've gotten a big glimpse into like they're married and they have children.
Yeah.
They're family is the focus of a couple of episodes, and so that becomes a big thing, but it's, you know, not anything you need to like know going into it. There's also another episode that's a sequel to another great episode of Futurama, where they solve the problem, the environment problem, by dropping a giant fucking ice cube into the ocean.
Yes. Okay.
So there's a sequel to that episode where that is no longer working.
Oh. And
they do this whole like tongue in cheek, but very like looking at the audience like, if only the people in the 21st century had known this, maybe this wouldn't have happened.
Oh, Jesus Christ. That's fucking hilarious. That is fucking hilarious.
I think it's Fry even gives this whole speech about like, one of them gives a speech about how, certainly if the people knew, back then, they wouldn't have voted against their own self-interest.
Oh my God, like, dude, that's hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, the show is really laying it on thick.
Thick, yeah.
But overall, like, yeah, it's a pretty solid season. I'm probably gonna go back and rewatch it. There's a lot of visual gags. It's a really, really good episode about people being addicted to screens. Which is, it's so weird to have Futurama dealing with like current shit like this. So all of the kids and Bender wind up getting shipped off to this camp that's supposed to wean you off screen usage.
Okay.
And it's run by Zap Brannigan.
Oh, shit. Oh, man.
It's so good. It's so silly. But yeah, it's a really, really solid season of Futurama. I hope they get to do more. Like,
actually, they did. But they're actually, like, I was just looking it up while you were talking. And season 14 is definitely expected to air next year. Okay, or expected to. Deal. Like, it's actually airing, like, concurrently. It's weird because it's, like, all of the episodes have dropped, but it's actually showing on FXX weekly.
So, yeah, is weird. I think I would rather have watched it weekly. Mm-hmm. I did wind up basically binging it in, like, 2 or 3 days. But it would have been nice to, like, sit down and just watch this weekly, you know?
Yeah, and last year... That's why I think
I'm going to go back and rewatch it.
Yeah, the last season actually did. Like, they actually did do that. They actually dropped them weekly, which was interesting. I guess they just decided to change it on the willy-nilly and drop all of these all at once. Who knows? But, I mean, they're actually already working on the next season. Like, they're already animating them because it takes so long to animate to put it through the pipeline.
We'll have new King of the Hill and new Futurama next year.
So yep, absolutely.
It's fucking 1999. It's 2002 all over again.
I mean, quite literally, quite literally. Was there anything else that you wanted to talk about before we got into Only Murderers for a second?
Nope, that's the only other thing I watched was Only Murders in the Building. Well, I watched the new season of Daryl Dixon started. I watched that, but there's nothing to really talk about there.
It just his love affair with Carol. Like, he just got Carol back. That's all that matters. That's literally all that's happened, right? Like, basically.
Yeah. Real quick. So, it's frustrating enough that, like, he wakes up in the first season and he's in Paris, right? And you're like, how the fuck did he get to Paris?
Yeah.
Like, okay. And then in the second season, him and Carol reunite, which, how do they find each other? Okay. Yeah. Whatever. This season, they're back together. And they're trying to get back to America. Well, they're in London or England somewhere. And they find, like, one guy who has a boat. And they convince him to, like, teach them how to sail. And so they're going to all sail off to America. Well, something happens. That dude dies. Spoilers. And then the boat crashes, and they're in another country. And I'm just like, oh, my God. It's like the fucking Walking Dead world tour. And I don't love it. He's great. She's great. It's just feels like an excuse for them to just film overseas, which, fuck it. Adam Sandler does it. I guess y'all can do it, too. So... It's not grabbing me. So,
yeah.
At this point, I'm just, you know, like, okay, well, I've watched all the other stuff. I guess I'm watching this too. I think we texted about Upload, but I don't know if I brought it up last week on the podcast. I did watch the final 4 episodes of Upload.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Okay. All right. I have it on my list to check out. Because it's a good show. Like, I mean, we talked about that, like, during, like, that was like one of those pandemic shows that you kind of like you were like, okay, I hope it survives, because it was like, it really did do something more than the typical pandemic show. So
it also takes on the whole, like, you know, life after death thing, you know, like, how do we extend our life into artificial intelligence and computers, and it does it better than fucking alien Earth. So
everything is better than like that's like that should be the episode's title. Everything is better.
Everything's better than alien Earth. Well, maybe not Big Bald Beautiful Journey, but we'll talk about that.
At least it tries something different than Alien Earth.
Yeah, that's true. but yeah, only murders back to one episode a week, which is good. I'm glad.
I mean, we need the 2-hour premiere. Like to be honest, like we really do. Like, or the 90-minute premiere, because it sets the tone for everything. And I mean, talk about something that was like, okay, so like, here's the thing is that there's some times where you just read the room and you know what's going to happen, but it's still delightful to watch it happen, right? Like how it happens, because we knew that this was going to be the thing. I mean, we even talked about it a little bit. It was like, oh yeah, they're going to get like swept up and, you know, Mabel is going to fall in love with the billionaire boy. And like, you know, they're all going to like get duped and, I mean, sure as shit, they got duped, but talk about like delightful writing. Like there's nothing more I find more pleasurable than, and I don't know, maybe you agree, you disagree, but there's nothing I find more pleasurable than, you know, the outcome, but the road to get there is so delightfully written that I'm okay with it. Like I'm okay with you getting me to that point because I know that at this point it's going to spiderweb into something completely different.
So the one thing I'll say, it's not really a negative, but it's actually a positive, because the show is so smart that if we didn't have the whole thing with Beanie Feldstein and that, like, oh shit, I like she makes me feel bad about my life for some reason, Mabel not catching on to everything would be really frustrating.
Yes.
Because she's definitely smarter than that. She should have seen through a lot of that bullshit.
Yeah.
And so they write that into the show. Like, why wouldn't she be skeptical of what's going on? Why would she believe this billionaire trust fund dipshit and not question it? Why would she want to like believe those things? And it's because she's so caught up in the keeping up with the Joneses. They don't read a contract. They don't have a discussion. They just write their names like, oh shit. Yeah. You know, we understand why, Oliver and, Steve Martin's character do it. Charles do it.
Charles.
But like Mabel is so skeptical of everything.
Yep.
That, you know, she would have been one to put the brakes on and ask questions. But because we have what we already had, and that conversation she had that he then used against her, we get her rushing into this thing, and now they have to figure out a way around it, you know, which is going to be kind of interesting.
No, absolutely. Like I'm glad, like this is the kind of wonderful writing that you expect from Only Murders. And when it's gone, I'm really going to be sad. Like, I often forget how good of a writer Steve Martin is, and how good of a, like, it's not just him, it's the writer's room, but he sets the tone, because, I mean, like, he was the one that initially created the show with, who is the guy? I can't even think of his name, but, and I'm sorry, guys, like, it's... I'm a bad podcaster. They would love me at Only Murderers because they're and I do love drunk girls in what, Into Murders is what it was called.
Drunk sluts solve murders or something like that.
And so we can take back, like, and then Oliver, of course, Oliver is the one that fucking asks, so we can use slut again? And he goes, no, only sluts. it's like, it's just one of those things. John Hoffman, that's the series creator. But they're so smart about how they write these characters and how it's a layered cake of like intention that you never have to worry about. Like when you go back and think about the things that happen, it's all character based. It's all just kind of like the long con, right? Like it's always about like it, the House of Cards is like not a House of Cards at all. It's an actual house that has like good foundations. And I love that about each season is that like, and it progresses on that. Like it adds to that. Like you were saying, like the whole thing of softening Oliver in last season with the Broadway production and making it about that really helps with this year, allowing Oliver to go back to the shitty human being that he always was. But it's not as bad because you constantly remember. And then there's these, like this episode was probably one of my favorite things. One of my favorite digs that made me laugh so hard was Renee Zellweger looking at the wallpaper and going, "Oh, yeah. Here, the Waldorf and like the Waldorf and Statler thing." And I laughed so fucking hard because it's like it she cut to the quick of Oliver so fast. Yeah. But my favorite part is the setup of, "Oh yeah, you know, this really needs to be redesigned." And then they redesign it. And then Mabel's like side comment. She's like, "It really is a lot better than the last, this is really a lot better." It's kind of like, it's that stuff that like, it still adds character, but it's such a stupid little like in joke and comedy. It's all like little bits of comedy, right? It's like all of the stuff with Christoph Waltz and how old he is and Dorothy Parker. Like that made me fucking laugh too. And he's like, "What sexual awakening, the first or the second?" And I'm like there were two sexual awakenings and shit. Like I'm like, "What?" And then or the war. Like I had to put my wife away for after the war, and like, which war? Or like the Regis and Kathy Lee clip of Steve Martin being repurposed. Like, Xennials won't understand that, but you and I, like, that's the kind of shit we appreciate.
Yeah,
you know,
it's clever. It's clever editing. You know, it reminded me a lot of there's a bit in Cougar Town, a very underappreciated show, where Courtney Cox is going through her character, Jules, is going through her photo album with her son, and there's a picture of her with Bruce Springsteen. And he's like, "You met Bruce Springsteen?" And she's like, "Yeah, I was like in one of his videos too." Like, that's another story for another time or something like that. And it's just like such a nod to like the real life. And like, if you've been a fan of her for, you know, her career, you kind of know the story behind it. And it's just such a wink at the audience that you just appreciate shit like that, you know? Kind of made me miss Regis.
Well, also, like, okay, so, like, you do know that his daughter, J.J. Philbin, writes for Only Murderers.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I can only imagine that, like, I just knew because, like, I've seen her name come up and I researched her after. Like, I think she's been on a staff writer and then a lead writer. Like, she's a staff writer first two seasons, then I think the third season is when she got her first credit as lead writer.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and so, like, she's been a part of, like, I think she even wrote the last year's finale with Hoffman. Yeah, she did. But she's the daughter of Regis, like, Nepo Baby, you know, of course. But she's the daughter of, I can only imagine that was like an in-joke between all of the writers to have Regis there because it's her daughter. It's his daughter. But that's also not the first time that Regis is, like, they've cut to Regis before.
No.
Because I think that they've done the same thing with Oliver because Martin Short. Didn't he have like a rivalry with Regis? I can't remember.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah. I'd have to go back. That's a show that like, this is a show, honestly, that when the run is done, if they don't have a Blu-ray of the collected set, I'm going to be very upset. Cause I kind of want it on a nice big box set with commentaries and everything, because it's such a delightfully...
Give me the collector's edition. Give me a box set that's like a miniature version of
the Arcadian.
Yeah. That's what I want. So
yeah. Yeah, that would totally be great with all the characters from the, but it done in the way that the opening title sequence is with the animated versions of the everybody.
Yeah.
That would be great. Yeah, no, absolutely. But yeah, just continues to reward, like, as if you're a fan, and if you're not, I actually am jealous of anybody that's not and that has these five seasons to like dive into.
Yeah, Steph got caught up like in time because she hadn't watched the show, and I told her, I was like, I think you'd like it because you love the Agatha Christie stuff, like you're into that, and
yeah.
So she, just to get caught up, she watched it separate. Because like, I'll watch it with you, but you know, we have such limited time together because work schedules. I go to work a lot earlier than she does, so she would just, you know, sit on the couch with Ripley and watch, you know, 3-4 episodes a night. And so she got caught up pretty quick. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, I was a little jealous. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, I want to rewatch it. But, like, I just haven't had time, you know?
Yeah.
Because everything else. So, but yeah, I think it'll be a show that I wind up going back and rewatching. Either because we're not they haven't said this is the final season.
No. So. I mean, and they're so cooking with gas that they could do, like, they could do another couple of seasons. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's enough. Like, it's not like they're slowing down or they're not. They don't, like, I understand with. Like leaving on a high, but also I also understand that you probably have another 2 or 3 seasons in you. Like, yeah. And considering the fact that I feel like all three of them, not just they're not just good friends and they work well together, but I also feel like you're staying in a place, like you're going to New York for a couple of weeks, then you come back and then you stay in LA for like 3 months to do something, like, especially, and
it is a consistent job for a lot of people.
Yeah, know? Exactly. And also, like, the level of talent that you're getting, like, I thought that last year was good. I mean, the fact that you got two, like, okay, so you just didn't, like, you got like this season, you got not one, not two, but 3 Academy Award winning actors, Diane Weiss, Christoph Waltz, and Renee Zellweger in major roles.
Yeah.
I mean, how, like, and you still have people that are coming back, like people like, you know, people like Meryl Streep, like, you know, that are coming back and continually wanting to play in the sandbox, right? And it's not to say, like, we still haven't seen the premiere, so we could still have Galifianakis, Eugene Levy, and Eva Longoria come back, right?
Yep.
You know, Amy Ryan continually comes back, right? Jan continually comes back. So I don't know, like, it feels like there's a lot left in the tank. I don't feel like this doesn't feel like this season doesn't feel like they're treading water. Like, none of the seasons feel like that, right?
No. I was a little like, with the last season, I was like, I don't know, this might be, but by the end I was like, oh no, I'm wrong. This show's still great.
Yeah, exactly. So. Like, it's still kind of like, but also that was because we started off with one episode. Like, yeah. Right? Like it wasn't like, and I think that they course corrected that. Like, they understood instantly, we need 2 or 3 episodes. We can't just give you one episode. We need to kind of set the tone and leave you on a cliffhanger that sets everything up. And like Only Murders doesn't set up its plot the pilot episode. It's like it takes a couple of episodes before we actually get the crux of it all, right? You know, so I don't know, man. Like I said, like if they went another three seasons, I would not be surprised. Because there's still a lot left in the tank, and like it also proves to me that Steve Martin and Martin Short, like they're still like sharp. It's not like they're losing their edge. It's a different kind of edge. And I really appreciate that. I really appreciate like the fact that they have this energy and like they haven't lost it. They haven't dropped off, which I mean, most older comedians, they don't. They just get fucking racist and sexist and like just highly inappropriate. I mean, but I mean, they've never been like that. Those two have always been kind of like, you know, it was the other guy, right? It was Chevy. It was almost like they skipped over and everything that would have been them, that would have been bad behavior, got poured into Chevy. Oh, man. Do you wonder if Chevy watches this shit and gets so mad?
Yeah.
Like,
there's no way he watches it. Just the fact that they exist probably pisses him off to no end.
Yeah, so. like between this, anything that Donald Glover does, and anything that Joel McHale does, it's just like anything that exists with those people, he just hates. He just hates. Oh man, Chevy, if you just had changed, if you had just not been that asshole, like if you had just been able to age.
Yeah, which is funny. So we can pivot here because I've only watched about 30 minutes of it, but I know you watched the whole thing. Talking about people that it's like, man, we really want to like this person, but they're a dickhead. And so I watched the first 30 minutes of AKA Charlie Sheen on Netflix. Yes.
Okay.
Have not got to finish it yet, but I know you watched the whole thing.
Yes.
And like, there's just something about this guy, man.
Yeah.
Who, like, yeah, you really didn't like him when he was on his shit. Like, that whole cocaine-fueled winning bullshit, like, fallout with Chuck Lorre, it was maddening. Like, oh my God, man. Like, somebody stop this guy. And then watching him sit down and be pretty honest about everything, at least from the 30 minutes I saw.
Yeah.
You get endeared to him even more, you know?
No, I know. It's weird. Cause like first, like, I think that like any Xennial doesn't understand, like Charlie Sheen was a joke. They don't understand. Like even like the people that like grew up on 2.5 Men, they don't understand Charlie Sheen was a fucking movie star. Like, he was a movie star. Like, he was an Academy Award nominated guy, like Platoon, Wall Street. But even then, when he, Major League, when he transitioned into comedy with Major League, Hot Shots Part 2, like, people don't understand, like, he was one of the first guys that got that body. Like, when we saw him in that trailer, we were like, holy shit, he actually fucking did that. Like, I don't think that people understood, like, the gravity of who Charlie Sheen was. And I really appreciate the fact that they had, like they had Sean Penn there. And Sean Penn, like, he's kind of like the it's weird to, like, say this, but he's, like, the weird truth sayer, the chain-smoking truth sayer of the whole entire documentary. Because he's there the entire time, talking shit, talking about coke, talking about Charlie, like praising Charlie, like, you know, like in a weird, shocking way. Like, you don't get Sean Penn for these kinds of documentaries, right? Like, Sean doesn't show up for shit like this, but he did for this, right? Because he was so close to Charlie. It's interesting. It's intriguing. And it's like you said, like at the end of it, like you're this documentary just makes it all the more compelling. Cause you're like, you did some deplorable shit, but I'm still rooting for you. I still want you to do good. And it just, it's the, like you said, it's like this weird, it's this weird affectation that you cannot explain why you're rooting for this guy. Like, you want him to do well. Like, you want him to get over his bullshit, the whole winning, like, you know, of course it was all because he was bipolar and he was on coke. I mean, Jesus Christ, you know, I mean, this is what happens when you're on coke, right? And you have mental illness. But they get into that. Like, the second half, it gets super dark, but not dark where you can't watch it, because Charlie is talking about it in his own words. And even Sean, like, you know it's bad when Sean Penn says, you know, there are guys out there that have a tolerance level and are supercharged sexualized, and they are these people that can survive anything, and then there's Charlie Sheen. Yeah. Like, when somebody like, when Sean Penn, a dude who we all have known, like, had a notorious past, says this about Charlie, like Charlie is the grade A specimen for, like, everything hedonistic, you know that that's, like, saying something. Because they probably did party together. And if Sean Penn is saying, no, man, I can't do that shit, like, that's a bridge too far. And Charlie's like, no, man, nothing's a bridge too far. And survive. I mean, he's still fucking alive. Yeah. I mean, it gets into everything. It even gets into his AIDS, HIV diagnosis. Yeah. Like, and he talks about it. Like, he literally sits there. Like, there's no topic. It's weird because you would think that some of the topics are off limits, but they're not. Like, but they also don't talk about certain things. They brush upon them, but they also dive deeply into other ones. So you're like, is it, like, it was probably more a choice of time, because, like, the whole two wives, two porn stars as wives, they show up, but they really don't go into that dynamic. They kind of brush upon it. But everything's talked about, like, including, like, Charlie saying, like, the worst thing that could possibly happen for a guy like me is, like, I was just beginning my hedonistic downfall, and CBS Less Movies gives me, like, the biggest contract that a star has ever had on TV. And it was just open the floodgates for whatever I wanted. I could just ask for anything. The interesting part is Denise Richards, like, actually being on it, and, like, her arc in the doc. And I will tell you, she still loves Charlie. Like, you can instantly tell. Yeah.
I watched, I watched something with her, I guess it was, it might be a piece of this, 'cause I haven't seen the whole thing. But I saw it online, and just, I was like, yeah, she still loves this dude. Like, not in love, not, but, like, she, everything she did was out of concern for, like, him, and making sure he didn't do damage to anybody else.
Yes. Know? No, absolutely.
And she got painted the way she got painted for all of it. And
yeah, which is,
in hindsight, it's easier to see that, like, okay, well, there was a lot of, like, bullshit being thrown around, but, I'm really interested to see the rest of it. I'll probably finish it. We'll probably finish it sometime this weekend.
Okay.
It made me think, you were talking about Chevy Chase and why couldn't you just get better, man. Like, stop being such a prick. And, you know, like, who knows what the hell the future holds for Charlie Sheen, but, like, yeah, hope he stays clean and sober and healthy, and maybe he can do something, you know. He seems to have made somewhat amends with Chuck Lorre. So
yeah,
he showed up in a few episodes of Bookies,
so. like in the most Charlie Sheen sort of way, and I kind of like that. There's this whole weird like transparency to Charlie now. Like, he doesn't give a shit. Like, he's like, yeah, I fucking was a gambling addict. I was an alcoholic. I was a cokehead. Like, I don't care. Whatever. Which is kind of like it's this wonderful thing. But I also think that, like, it's weird because, like, at the end of it, you watch it and you go, yeah, Charlie, I think Charlie feels like he's not going to do any, like, he'll do little things, but he's not going to do big things anymore because he's already got enough money and his focus is on his kids. Like, yeah. It's a really beautiful thing at the end. Like, you watch the end and you go, ah, okay. Okay. Like, he's got this kind of, like, stable, like, circle around him that includes his ex-wives, which is interesting, and his kids. So you almost don't want him to come back to Hollywood because, you know, as we all know, Hollywood sometimes can be the worst. It can be the worst piece of addiction for anybody. But yeah, like, I really, really enjoyed it. I was genuinely surprised at how much I enjoyed the 3-hour doc and how quickly it went. So... but yeah, no, absolutely. Well worth your time. Not those like Beatles documentaries that are all self-serving. Like, we're going to show you all the great footage and nothing like that. This is actually, and it's because of the subject and how he allowed them to just into his life and go, yeah, show me as fucked up as I am. That allows for some really great stuff. And then great home footage. Like, they had access to, like,
That's been the most fascinating thing for me. Like, I know Martin Sheen and Emilio Estevez declined to participate, which,
yeah,
you know, it's a shame, but, like, he does speak on that, like, pretty early on. He's like, I have their support. They've been nothing but great. They don't want to participate. And there's no ill will there. So, yeah. Yeah, seeing that home video footage of their Super 8, like, movies, like young Sean Penn, young Emilio Estevez, George Clooney.
George Clooney was the shocker, was like, oh, yeah. Shit. Like, all of them from, and now I understand, okay, so, like, it's weird because, like, Sean Penn was involved with Dogtowns and Z-Boys, the documentary, right? Like,
yeah.
And I didn't understand why, but now it was never given context. Why? Was because he grew up in that area. He grew up in the area that all of those kids, so he was a part of those kids. He was just not the skating part. He was, you know, he was the acting part, but those kids mixed in with the other kids. And so that makes sense to me. And I forgot, Sean Penn is a Nepo baby. Leo Penn, his dad, is a huge acting god. Like, he's like a theater acting god. Like, he, like Meisner is an acting teacher. So I completely forgot about this stuff. You know, it's like everybody back in that, like, the 80s appeared to be a Nepo baby, right? But, I mean, he's Sean fucking Penn. Like, right. I gotta put respect on his name. Like, part of the reason why I'm so excited for One Battle After Another is that he's between him and Benicio, like, those are dudes. Like, those are, like, these are, like major acting people that are acting with Leo.
DiCaprio, Penn, and Benicio Del Toro. Yeah, it's like, yeah. I can't wait to see it next week.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
So, you want to talk about Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey?
Yeah, let's go ahead and talk about this big swing. and it is. It's a big swing. Like, okay, so, like, it's not a good movie. It's really not. It's not. Like, I had to think about it because there were moments that tricked me. And I don't think it tricked me. I like romances that try to get out of the norm. But yeah. I think that it was sketched from the beginning because you're using an AI GPS thing to tell a love story. I'm like,
yeah.
And I like Kanaga. Like, and don't get me wrong, it is beautifully shot. Like Columbus is one of my favorite underrated,
never. I think the only thing I've seen that he's directed is the two episodes of The Acolyte. That he directed.
Okay. I mean, he also directed this other movie called After Yang, which is also a great movie. Friend of the show, Scott Phillips, who also went to go see this movie because of those two movies. Like, After Yang was like his top film of that year that it came out. I think it came out in 2023. That's how good, like, he, like, you know, that's how high in regard that this is held, he's held. But it just, Seth Reese's script,
Seth Reese got his start basically, or I won't say his start, was made a more or less a name for himself, writing like satirical stuff.
Yes.
Like Onion stuff and fake sports shit and like stuff with a little bit more bite than this has. If this movie had more cynicism to it, it might actually be better.
Yeah,
the cynicism feels, it just falls flat when it happens to me.
It does. Like, it feels like, Like, he wrote one of my favorite movies of 2022, The Menu. And that is a bitter, bitter pill of a movie. That is a sarcastic, like it takes down everybody. And there was a part of me that thought that this was going to be kind of, and okay, so don't try to cancel me, guys, but this is a very similar, like, this is what I thought it was going to be Annie Hall. Like, in the way that Annie Hall handles romantic comedies. I'm not saying anything more than that, because it's the only reference point I had when I saw the trailer, which was, it was, like, visually astute, but also, like, from the people that were involved, I was like, oh, okay, so maybe this is going to kind of deconstruct what romance is, because that's what it feels like it's going to do. But it doesn't.
Annie Hall by way of the Adjustment Bureau.
Yes.
So, which is, I think, an underrated not a brilliant movie, just like better than, but it also suffers from the thing this movie kind of suffers from, and that you can't seem to pick a lane or a kind of theme. You kind of just want to be everywhere and do everything.
All at once.
And you go from like one extreme to this other extreme, and yeah, it's just kind of a mess, and it's unfortunate because it's anchored by two really good performances when the script isn't getting in the way.
Yes. So, like, Colin Farrell and Margaret Robbie are fucking stars. And what I thought was going to happen was, like, you're going to use the stars and deconstruct it and kind of give me those moments that stars can give you when they're working together. But I don't know. Like, they're not wrong. I think, like you said, it's the script that's wrong. It's the, like, I hate to say it, but it's the direction that's wrong. There's not a tone. Like you said, it's like, pick a lane. Like, either pick this weird abstract world to go in or not. Don't take me,
you, like, keep going in and out of it.
Yeah, like, okay, it's like, okay, so, like, the beautiful thing about Eternal Sunshine is that it has this reality, but then when it goes into fantasy, it commits to the fantasy, and it stays there until it gets out of the fantasy, right? And I feel like that's almost like what they were going for, but the tone doesn't work with the tone isn't there, right?
Yeah.
It's like, it just doesn't work.
Taking us out of, like, the minute you're, like, and I get you need to move from one fantasy to another, but why doesn't one door lead to
the next?
Another? Why? Exactly. Yeah, why do they have to go back to the car and then talk about what just happened and then go to the next door? Like, why doesn't the high school door then lead to the hospital door? Then,
exactly.
You know, like, by completely pulling you out and then putting you back in, it's just this weird, like, it's not a shock to the system, but it does damage to the story you're trying to tell, because you have to keep readjusting. And then when you do the thing where they have the argument and they become the painting, it feels wrong because they're in the car. And so the real world is now also the fantasy world. It loses something.
It really does. Well, it's like the choice of having Billy Magnussen and Sarah Gadon play their respective like mates. Why didn't they have it so that, because this feels like a two-hander, why didn't they play each other's mates and break up with one another? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's like it's, I don't know, like,
especially when you have him become his dad.
Dad. Like, yeah, but you don't have her become, but you don't ever become the mother.
Yeah.
Like, why?
That's what I thought. That's where I thought we were going with that. I was like, she's going to be her mom, and she's going to have to tell her younger self that it's all going to be okay.
Which is part of growing up.
Yeah. And it feels weird. I guess you have the moment where he's his dad, because at some point he says in the car, like, I wish I could go back and tell myself that you're not special.
Special,
It's him, you know, coming to understand why his parents thought he was special. And here's where I'll jump in and say, I'm going to talk about Hamish Linklater, who I think is a very good actor. I really, really enjoy him. Holy shit. Why did you cast him in this? Why is he here? That Irish accent is terrible.
So bad.
You mean to tell me that there was not an Irish actor that you could get? I understand. Oh, we got Hamish Linklater. Then make his mother Irish.
Yep.
And make his dad American. Like, why? It's so bad.
Okay, like, I have a way to solve this. Is give him his dad that, like, his acting partner in a lot of Irish movies, which is give him fucking
Brendan Gleeson.
Yeah. Give it some fucking oomph, right? Because I know that they don't look alike, but that doesn't matter. Like, at least you would have a guy that actually is Irish and understands the Irishness and is like has performed against Colin Farrell in multiple movies and understands his ebbs and flows. Like, please do something. You know, or just not have that character there. Like, again, it's a two-hander. So if you had had them portraying their own, like, their own versions of their people, I wouldn't have, like, that would have been more interesting than casting other people, right? Like, that feels like, I know it sounds weird, but that sounds more like a Kanaga thing, is that casting, like, you cast Colin Farrell, but you also, he portrays his dad, whereas Margaret Robbie also portrays her mother. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, so, like, they're playing against one another, but they're just done just different enough to allow them, like, to be, to inhabit these roles, but also to say, like, it's also saying, like, because it's also trying to say, like, you become your mother, you become your father, like, all of these things, like, you could have done that. It was an odd, perplexing film that was visually stunning. I saw it in Adobe Vision Theater, and man, some of these visuals like popped in a way, like those umbrellas popped. Those umbrellas popped. The paintings popped, but it was all for, like, it was like all visuals for a very muddled story that felt like they didn't make the right decisions from the ground up.
Yeah. And the more interesting thing would definitely have been to see are they angels? Are they devils?
Yeah.
Like, what are they? Much like the Adjustment Bureau, you don't ever really know, like, what side they're on, other than, like, the side of, like, either keeping these two together or tearing them apart. But like Kevin Kline and Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Yeah. Just a waste. A waste. Yeah,
like because that's way more interesting.
Kevin Kline is a guy who rarely does things now. Like the last thing he did was like a cameo on Bob's Burger.
That's what he does. He's their landlord. Like that's his job.
Yeah.
Right now. Like that's for the last 10 years. Kevin Kline has been a voice on Bob's Burgers. He shows up about 10, 12 episodes a season, and he was in the movie, and then that's what Kevin Kline does. So having Kevin Kline in an actual, like, live-action film, and you give him six lines of dialogue. Now, he does get the funniest fucking moment in the movie, bar none, like, giving him the keys back and being like, I fixed your car. Like,
yeah,
from where it blew up. Like, he's like, sometimes that just happens. it's pretty funny, but it just, you're right. It feels like a waste because their chemistry is really interesting and you don't get to spend any time with that. Like, nope. You don't get to see them without Colin Farrell interacting with them, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's pretty frustrating. So, because I wish this movie was as profound as it thinks it is.
Absolutely. Like, especially with, like, it's not just wasting Kevin Kline and Phoebe Waller-Bridge and also Colin Farrell and Margot Robbie, but it's wasting people like Lily Rabe, who, like, Lily Rabe is fucking awesome. Like, I cannot, like, she's one of those women, I feel like, that, like, the people that use her are, like, she's like Judy Greer. Like, it's almost like, the blondness and the whiteness get in the way of how good she fucking is, because she is so fucking good in Better Call Saul. Like, she's so good whenever she's used by Vince Gillian, and she's good in other things. And here she has one fucking scene and she comes in and she kills it, but it's all for naught. And it's like the same way with Billy Magnuson and Sarah Gadon. Like, Billy Magnuson comes in and it's like, for the first time, he doesn't play a prick, but it's for what? Nothing. It's nothing. Like, it doesn't, It makes nothing. It's like Hamish Linklater. Like, you're like, he's completely miscast. But there's like these moments in this movie, like at the wedding when they're talking and they're flirting, it's like, fuck, that's good shit. Like, this is why you cast Colin Farrell and Margot Robbie, because they know how to charm each other to death. It's like old school Hollywood. It's almost like you want to take them out of this movie and plop them into something else written by Cameron Crowe, directed by Cameron Crowe. Like, something that gives them the platform to be as great as they can be. And it's just not that. Like, the movie is just not what I feel like it wants to be. Like I said, it's a big swing. Like, it proposes a lot and it makes this swing, but, you know, it's like, you know what it is? It's a big swing. It connects and it's a foul ball. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, yeah, oh, that shit. One where
you're like, oh shit, this might be a home run. And you're like, and it just hooks foul, like, so quick. And you're just like, oh fuck, this is not what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. It's not the Mookie and Ohtani back-to-back home runs that we watched last night. You know, it's not those. It's like when Mookie like connects and you're like, oh, it's going. Oh man, it's foul. Damn. And that's exactly what it is. And I mean, I appreciate it, and maybe that's what you need to get to the next thing for Kanaga. Yeah. But at the same time, when you have all this money and this this possibility and this kind of genre, you don't get this second chance again. You know?
Yeah. I spent most of the movie thinking about the fact that he plays the Penguin and she played Harley Quinn. And at one point in time, they wanted the Penguin to be he was the original baddie in the Birds of Prey film.
Yes.
And when they were told the Penguin was off limits, they had to pivot to the Black Mask. And I was just like, man, his Penguin in that movie, what a movie that would have been.
Or imagine if Margaret Robbie decided to show up in the Penguin show.
Yeah.
Okay, I know this sounds like this is really bad of me to say because she is so good in the show, but imagine if it's Harley Quinn instead of Sofia Falcone.
Oh yeah. I wouldn't swap that out because she is so fucking
Christine, like, Christine Milioti. She won.
Did she win it? Yeah. I was about to say, didn't she just win an Emmy? And shows like that, like, I know it's serious comic book stuff, but like, generally anything is like, well, it's based on a comic book. We're not going to give it an Emmy. So, like, that's, it's pretty damn good.
Yeah. No, it is. And it's sad that she's not going to be in the Batman Part 2, but I'm okay with it. Whatever, I trust Matt Reeves.
I hope that movie still happens.
it's happening. Like they've said it's happening.
I know everybody's got a script and it's just, you know. When cameras roll, I'll believe it's happening. So
Well, let's hope that Netflix doesn't buy Warner Brothers because then everything becomes streaming. Like, Jesus Christ. Yeah. I really hope not. Good Lord. You couldn't get the worst possibilities, right? Like, we heard news this week that Netflix is going to put in a bid for them. So it's like, it's either Paramount or Netflix. It's like two devils. Like, you couldn't get Disney to do it. You couldn't get Disney to fucking put in a bid.
We were talking about this at work and somebody chimed in with like, doesn't that create a conflict of interest and like a monopoly? And I was like, what country do you think you're living in?
Exactly. What the fuck do you think is happening right now? Like, what did you just wake up and like, did you wake up after a 10-year nap? Like, come on, please. Like, even before this administration, like to be perfectly honest, like Obama let it happen. Like,
yep. Like, I said, like, all the work they did in like the late 60s, 70s, and early 80s to like this antitrust stuff to create like these many, many organizations to keep like one set of people from ruling over everything. I said, that's gone, man. It's been gone. It's been gone for fucking 30 years.
30 as soon
maybe not as, 30 no, at least 30, 20
no 30 as soon as Clinton signed the Deregulation Act.
Yeah,
because it deregulated everything. Like, literally, people do not understand. There's a lot of things to like, there's a lot of things that people dislike Clinton for the wrong reasons, but the biggest reason I would ever say to anybody was, no, it's deregulation, because that started the beginning of the end. Because it allowed corporations, because you literally defunded every organization. Like you were saying, every antitrust organization eventually got shit canned. And why? Because he deregulated everything. It wasn't just mortgage markets that he deregulated that everybody thinks is the big thing. I'm like, no, he deregulated all markets. It allowed the entry for eventually everything, including media. Like, yeah, we're going to have one corporation. We're going to have the Disney Corporation. Like, that's my thing. Within the next 7 years, Disney's going to own everything. They are. I mean,
we're headed for, like, the worst version of the Demolition Man timeline. Like, yes. We're not even going to get the, like, the utopia kind of, like, non-violent. We're, like, headed for the whatever the worst version of that is.
Yeah. The Edgar-friendly... Like, most of us are going to be Edgar friendly. Like, you know, that's basically what it is. Yeah, like, I'm just, like at least in the U.S.
All restaurants are Taco Bell.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. All restaurants are Disney. What do they serve? Yeah. Disney. But what do you mean? Diet Disney or regular Disney? But like, what about steaks? No, we just have Disney. Like, that's all it's going to be. Like, Idiocracy, but worse.
Yeah.
Actually, no, it's not. It's about Idiocracy. Like, who knew that Idiocracy was like 20 years in our future instead of 200?
What was that? 2001?
Yeah.
And the movie, like, got no box office.
Because
I think it was like right around September 11th. And finally, when it showed up on home video, because I become a Mike Judge fan. I was like, I want to watch this. I bet it's fun. And I watched that movie. I was like, this is the dumbest shit I've ever. This movie's so fucking stupid. And for the better part of the last decade, I probably thought about that movie every day.
Yep. Saying, we are here. We are here right now. Yep. Why are we here? Like, I constantly ask myself, why are we here? Why are we here right now? But, you know, the answer is in the question. Like, I mean, that's literally what it is. Like, the answer is in the question. But whatever, man. Like, you know. Yeah. Like, back to Big Beautiful Journey. It's big. It's bold. Yeah. I don't know if it's beautiful, and I don't know if it's a journey.
I mean, it's kind of pretty to look at.
And yeah.
It's a journey in the sense that, like, there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's a big swing. It's just like, I feel bad shitting on it. Like the opposite of Alien Earth, where it's like, I kind of feel like I have to like point out that this show is dumb. It's pretty and it's well acted and it's dumb. Yeah. This is kind of the same, but not like I appreciate the effort. I just wish it was as profound, like I said, as profound as it thinks it's being. I don't think it's like reading poetry you wrote in high school, where it's just
exactly.
Like, you thought it was so fucking like soul, like I'm bearing my soul, and you read it and you're like, dude, this is not good. Like, you know, you think you're being profound, but you're not saying anything that like most people who've lived life don't kind of already realize, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, ultimately that's the biggest problem is that I don't think it has anything to say about anything about fate, death, like none of it. Like, as frustrating as a movie like Serendipity is, I think it has more to say about, you know, soulmates and shit like that than this movie does. Yeah. So, and I go to Serendipity because that's one of my, least favorite like romantic, like I don't really love romance movies anyway. There's very few that I love. I thought this was going to be more of a, like I said, I thought it was kind of more of a bite, so that's why I was kind of just, I was like, oh, okay, like I'm being on this, like it's gonna like have this, you know, catharsis to it that it just doesn't have. But yeah, Serendipity is a movie that infinitely pisses me off because, like, the people in that movie that get the shit end of the stick don't get enough screen time because
no,
fuck those two assholes, man.
Like, seriously,
very much the people love The Notebook, and I'm just like. Yeah, that's sweet. They get back together and they grow old and they die together. But you know what? They ruin fucking two other people's life, or at least one other person's life. Like, that's fucking, or Sweet Home Alabama. Like,
oh,
that's
God. Another one
where it's just like, but what about that guy?
Yeah.
Like,
Seriously.
That guy seems like a really good dude, and you just fucked him over. So, like, movies like that really kind of frustrate me. So, all because, you know, just whatever. At least this isn't that, and it does have a little, like, courage behind it. Like, especially for Margot Robbie's character, you know, she's pretty, like, she's being coy to start with, but, like, when it comes time to, like, just be honest, like, she at least is, you know. I do respect that, so.
Yeah, but then it becomes this whole, like, she tries to be this whole manic pixie dream girl thing.
Yeah.
Like, it very much so reminded me of, like, Eternal Sunshine, but you're telling me rather than showing me. Like, what I like about Eternal Sunshine is that it takes that trope of, like, that, like, and it tries to destroy it, and it tries to show you the real human behind those things and how just disturbing it is for that person and how you shouldn't be lionizing that kind of, like, oh, she's going to dance in the rain. Yeah. Yep. And this one, it's literally like, oh, I'm the manic pixie dream girl. You shouldn't like me because I break up with people. And it's like, okay, yeah, that doesn't help me at all. Like, if you're going to do that, show me. Like, show me why you're a terrible person. Show me you fucking your professor while your mom dies. But you can't do that because it's Margaret fucking Robbie. And you don't want America's...
You're just going to talk about it.
Yeah, you don't want the star, the super heart, like, the superstar... like the Tom Hanksian of all, the Tom Hanks of our generation, or not, of the new generation, to, like, be shown to be a terrible person, like, actually showing it. You have to just imply it, and make her feel bad for herself. It's a very weird choice about how, like, I almost wonder if this was a $2 million movie that it would be better. Like, you know, like a $2 million movie starring... Like, you know, starring John Cho and somebody else. And, like, you know, it becomes this different indie movie.
Did you ever see Sam Esmail's movie?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. We actually talked about it.
I'm drawing a blank on the freaking name.
Right, what is it called? Oh, God.
His first movie, I mean. His not first, the Netflix movie.
Leave the world behind. Not leave the world behind. Comet.
Comet. Yeah.
The one
leave the world behind was Netflix. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Comet does kind of something similar. Yes. To this, and you saying that made me think of Comet, where it's like, okay, yeah, that's a $2 million movie.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah.
And it does have the guts to, like, go to, not tell you about the darker places, to, like, really go to some darker personal places.
Yeah.
You know, and show, like, how shitty people actually can be to each other, and not just talk about them being shitty to each other.
Exactly. Like, I would love, there's still so much fertile ground within romances to do things, but people actively choose to make movies about, like, the same bullshit. It's like, why don't you show us movies about people finding each other after, like, show us those people that have been devastated by the people that you normally show as stars, those terrible human beings that are good looking and beautiful, but fucking just shitty behavior. Show the people that they broke up with. Like, it's almost like you want the equivalent of the Goon. Do you know what I mean? Like, the Goon is a comic book about basically a character that would have been, like, Goon number 4 that Batman beats the shit out of, right? Yeah. And it's a comic book about that Goon. Right? Like, of course, he's the toughest motherfucker in the world, and there's a lot of fucking crazy shit, but you're using it as an entry point to talk about something, right? Like, why can't we watch Boyfriend Number 2 and Girlfriend Number 4 and, like, make a movie about them getting together and healing. Like, you know, everything is always about, oh, finding new love and it's wonderful. And like, you know, let's cheat on our fucking, our current people, but it's okay because they're nobodies. Like, everybody is a lead character. And I feel like, and I know this sounds really weird because we're tying it all together to society, but people watch enough of these fucking shitty movies and they think it's okay to be shitty to other human beings. And so you get all of these fucking people that get their heart broken, and because there's no recipe for how to heal, what do they do? What do they do? They do what the guy in Umbrella Society does. He turn, like, they turn toxic and they turn into violence. I mean, that's literally what happens. Like, that's literally where we are right now, because there's all of this bullshit about the beautiful people and excusing their fucking behavior. And it's like, and this is a movie that does that. It's like, oh, it wishes away. And it's not to say that Billy Magnuson and Sarah Gadon, like the two like others, are not beautiful people. But I would love a couple of movies where we don't talk about those. Like, the beautiful people are exactly what you think they are, the shittiest human beings in the world. And we see about recovery. Like, that would be a real romantic movie, right? And what it takes, like, there's nobody that has to be an evil person, because it's hard enough to recover. I know by experience, like, the reason why I found my, like, how I found my wife was not a big, bold, beautiful journey. It was the exact opposite. I was the person that got broken up with by a manic pixie dream girl. And then I decided to recover. I didn't internalize it. I didn't turn violent. I recovered. But part of my recovery was my wife in finding this beautiful woman that cared about cared about me and cared enough about me to push me to get healthy. Like, why don't we see those movies? We don't see those movies. Like, that's romance. Like, I don't know. Like, it's weird. Like, I know that we went off on a tangent, but it makes me actively dislike this movie even more. Like, like, thinking about it now, I'm like, no, fuck you.
It's like there's no grounding there, and it's just like, okay, well, 6 months from now, this definitely doesn't work out.
Oh, no, absolutely not. She's going through another door. Like, she's literally leaving that door and going into another door. She might even pick Billy Magnuson to go through again. So it's like, it's one of those movies that is just like, it's a smokescreen. Like, they didn't dig deep enough. And I'm like, affairs of the heart, you got to kind of dig deeper. Like,
I will say this is the kind of movie in my 20s I probably would have been like, oh, this is beautiful, because like that's, or maybe not 20s, like early to late teens, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, cause that's what you think it's going to be, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and it's just like, but that shit doesn't last, man. Like, people that subsist on dramatic tension.
Oh, like, God. Yeah.
That shit burns out so fast, man. And, you know, you can get addicted to it, but like, it will, it's like any hard drug, it'll put you through something and you come out real rough on the other side of it. So it's just like, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's like, this movie is very similar to, like, and I know people like loved this movie. It got Academy Award nominations. But it very much so reminds me of Past Lives and The Materialists, which is, I know, a Celine song, like they're a double whammy, but they're no different, because like, literally it's about shitty human beings. They're just about shitty human beings. Like, and I'd like to see a movie where I didn't have to deal with shitty human beings, like, and them leaving good people. Like, maybe
shitty human beings doing the work to become not shitty human beings. Not like fucking magic therapy sessions where they're confronted with their past. Like, you know, if the metaphor were better for them confronting their past and their past actions, then maybe it would work. but it is just like, oh, all you gotta do is walk through this door and like relive your trauma. And I get that that's still a difficult thing, but it's also just walking through a door. They're not like actually doing any work, you know? We've shit on it enough. So next week we're definitely talking about
One Battle After Another.
One Battle After Another, which apparently is the like, it's the film. Like, yeah, that's what's gonna win. So that's what everybody seems to be saying. So we'll be talking about it come Oscar season in March. So I'm excited to see it though. The cast and the trailers and just, you know, the writer, director. It's, you know, it's exciting.
I mean, at worst, it's going to be a really good, like, I feel like it's going to be a really good action movie. Like, a friend of mine had said that it's...
Has he ever done an action movie?
Who, Anderson? No.
Yeah. No. He hasn't done anything like this.
Like, I feel like... Like, okay, so like just one thing about DiCaprio. I feel like DiCaprio is a... Like, he doesn't realize that he is an action lead, but he wants to be a character actor. But I feel like he's always constantly not doing these kinds of things that he should be doing, elevated genre. Like, The Revenant is basically an elevated cowboy movie, right? It's an elevated Western. Inception is a elevated sci-fi film. Like, when he's doing these kinds of films, like, where they're elevated... Like, I feel like that's where his brilliance comes in as a movie star. I, like, there is DiCaprio in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood works because he's literally playing, I feel like he's playing a version of himself, but the one that didn't get all of the roles, that only got action parts, right? Like, but not, like, the great stuff, but, like, the low-end stuff, right? But for me, like, DiCaprio... is not good in Killers of the Flower Moon or Don't Look Up or any of these like things like that. He's better in like I said, The Revenant, like Django Unchained, like all of these, like The Departed, Blood Diamond. I mean, there's a movie that nobody would ever want to see anymore because of just how it's like nakedly racist. But it's like those kinds of movies where he's in an action lead kind of thing, like a genre lead. I feel he shines. Like, it's the whole thing of like him. It's almost like, I almost wonder if like at this point in his career, he's going to pull a Tom Cruise, because Tom Cruise, remember, like we all remember Tom Cruise. I mean, he worked with Paul Thomas Anderson. Fucker was he was an Eyes Wide Shut. He was like this movie star that starred with serious directors. And then all of a sudden, he got this notion that he could be an action star, and all of us laughed at him. And the last thing you'd want to do it, but the best thing that ever happened to him was that people laughed. And he was like, no, I'm gonna fucking do it. And now, like, literally people are like, he's the last great movie star. He's going to be like doing things until did you hear the Clint comment recently about Tom Cruise?
No.
Because he has his, like, I don't know if you read, like, I bought it. I haven't read it yet. It's like 500 pages. I'm really looking forward to it. But there's an autobiography about Clint, and they were asking him about it. Like, they asked him about it, but he was like, which is like a praiseworthy thing to me. If you can piss off Clint, then I'm reading the book. But they asked him about movie stars and like, you know, like, are there any movie stars? And he goes, yes, of course there's still movie stars. He said Leo, but then he said, well, the last great movie star, the one that's going to be around for probably another 20 years is Tom Cruise. He's like, Tom Cruise will be the movie star that everyone studies. He's going to be around and relevant until far, like, he's like, you know, you guys thought that I had a relevant career. He's like, I just had one as a director. I stepped away from the acting and occasionally came back. This is a man who's only done acting and will continue to only do acting and will, into his hundreds, be relevant. He's like, quote me. And I was like, oh, shit, he's kind of right. Yeah. He's kind of right with Cruise. I mean, like, speaking to the Christoph Waltz blood transfusion, keeping youthful and shit. But there's a hope for me that DiCaprio kind of like in his 50s and 60s was like, fuck it, I'm just going to be an action star. And just kind of does that. Like, you know, kind of like decides to be, because like watching him in this, like all gruffled up, it's the first time I'm actively rooting for a Leo movie. Like, does that make sense? Like, I'm like, I want this movie to work. I want this movie to be a big hit just because he looks so fucking handlebar, shaggy ass motherfucker.
Yeah. He looks almost normal. And that's not something we get a lot of in DiCaprio's career. So,
and he's playing a father. He's playing a father to like a 20-year-old. And he's like,
which is weird because he dates 20-year-olds.
Yes, exactly. I wouldn't be surprised if he dates this girl after the movie. But it's like he's saying dad shit in the movie. Like the trailer, he's like, fucking nunchucks, I need a fucking real weapon. Or like, what's their pronouns? They, them? He's saying shit that like dads would say, and it's like, it's wild to see the guy is playing age appropriate. You know, but I'm excited. Like I'm excited. So we'll see.
I can't wait to see it. So all right. Until then, go check out everything else we do over at xwingfiles.com, or you can read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yeah, themovieall.com, where our coverage, by the time this posts, our coverage for Fantastic Fest has already begun. I'll have at least 3 to 5 reviews up. One of them being the Deathstalker 2025 remake. I will tell you this much. It's fucking good. It's so fucking good, dude. Like, it is it's better than the original. The original is a shitty, shitty, like, sword and sorcery movie, right? This one is actually really fun, and it doesn't take itself seriously. And Patton Oswalt is fucking great. Patton Oswalt is so good. So I'm actually looking forward to people seeing this low budget, fun R-rated sword and sorcery movie.
After the fun I had with Toxic Avenger, I definitely want to check this out. So
yeah, I may actually go see it in the theaters. Like, even though I've already seen it twice, like on a screener. I might go see it in the theater just because it demands kind of a big screen experience. Because it's like, it's something we don't get very often. And I mean, literally, dude, it has stop motion animation in it. It literally has stop motion animation. It. Like, I was genuinely shocked. So yeah, just a preview for things that are coming up on the Movie Isle website.
All right, and we'll see you guys next week.
See you guys next week.
Number 2 comics, number 3 Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Kal-El, number 8 The Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, see it all together if you're with me now.